the Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. You see it, we help you do it. AIB, for the life you're after.
Our first guest was here with us just at the end of March after losing his friend and business partner, Eddie Jordan. In those 2 months, he's written a book called FTB, Lessons from Eddie Jordan, Inspiration from a Life Lived at Full Throttle. Entrepreneur Keith O'Loughlin has lived a bit of a life at full throttle himself in his own way. Keith, you're very welcome to the show. Congratulations on the book. A very quick turnaround to write it.
Thanks, Richard. Yeah, it was, we had a deadline. So I talked to Eddie's wife just after he passed, and we wanted to do something that was fitting for him, because he was a man that was more about doing than about trophies in his houses. He had no trophies or memorabilia. It was about doing. So we wanted to launch an Eddie Jordan Foundation to help entrepreneurs and just people who want to be the best they can be. And actually, when I was doing this show with you, we talked about various business lessons and life lessons that Eddie had given people, and certainly given me. And that went into a LinkedIn article, and the feedback on that was from people to say, you need to make this into a book. So I turned my phone off and worked 18 hours a day for about 6 weeks, and the book is done and dusted, and we launched it last week.
Yeah, writing a book in 6 weeks, I'm sure you haven't done that before. You might not do it again either, but no. That's another story. And how have you been? You've been busy then in the last few months with all of that.
Yeah, very busy getting the book, but mainly just setting up this foundation to honour Eddie's legacy. So we launched last week in the Yacht Club in Monaco. Prince Albert came and gave us some great support, and we had about 100 people there, some of the goods and greats from Formula One and a lot of Eddie's friends. So it was it literally kicked off as the first cars went around the track, and Eddie lived in Monaco and it was his playground, so it was very fitting.
And I want to talk a little bit about some of those life lessons in the book later on. But to your own story, your brother Kevin, Keith, was on the show with us before. Very unusual to end up having two brothers on this show at different times. But he talked about your family when you were growing up, and you grew up in County Laois on the farm. And there was a pub, and there was a meat business, kind of steeped in entrepreneurship and business, really.
Yeah, until I was 10, we lived in a place called Rose and Alice in County Laois. And until I was 10, it was a pretty normal childhood. And my dad was a huge GAA person. My grandmother pulled my mother aside before they got married and said, Geraldine, just to let you know, you're always going to come second to GAA with Tom. And so GAA was a huge thing in our lives. And then when I was 10, we bought a pub and shop in the local village. But my dad still worked, and he was director of organisation for the IFA at the time. And he changed from that into, he started working in the meat business and then at a farm. So in our lives, it was always go. So my dad brought drive and ambition, and mom brought some support and relaxation, and she was fabulous. But
like, did any of the GAA rub off on you, Keith? No, were you sporty?
No, I had a long turning circle. I was determined but not fast. So
I thought you meant a long turning circle was how you played on the pitch.
I loved it, but I was never good enough. And shortly after we bought the pub, Dad arrived home with a computer and said, you learn how to use this. And I'd say I was maybe 11 at the time. So I was dispatched to do a course in how to use a computer. It was an Amstrad computer back in the day. And I think a couple of weeks later, I'd set up a spreadsheet to do stock taking, because I remember my mother would write out all the stock with longhand with a pen, and then use a pencil to just change the numbers and try and add them up. So she was mesmerised that a spreadsheet could do that by just changing the numbers, and it gave you the tots at the bottom.
So it gave you an early introduction to tech and to computers, but also at the same time, pub and meat business and all of that. There, did you know, at an early age, were you very hands-on helping out with them?
Oh yeah, no, I worked in the bar from when I was 11. Worked in the shop, and once my when I was 15, I remember my folks went on holidays with my family, and I'm like, I'm staying behind to run the pub. So I ran the pub and shop for a week. And in the meat business, I remember, you know,
the guards weren't worried about you in the bar at 11,
back
no.
Then, I was, I think now you wouldn't really get away with it, but back then it was fine. But we worked hard, and it was instilled in us to work hard. And like in the meat business, I worked in the layerage and also on the production line until Dad said, actually, you'd be smarter in the office. And so I started to do the business. Meat business is very, is tight margins.
And like, would he send product. You off in order, when a bit of responsibility to do various jobs in the meat?
Well, in different, at one stage, he sent myself and my brother Barry down on a truck down to, with a load of meat to Rungis Market in Paris. It's the largest market, and it's 500 acres in Paris. That'll give you some idea. And we left on a Saturday afternoon and drove, and we got in sometime, I think, about 6 a.m. on Sunday morning. But just as we were coming into Paris, the motorway, I think it was six lanes coming up to one of the toll booths. And as we came around the corner, it was just a fireball in front of us. The French farmers had put hay the whole way across the road and set fire to it in a protest. Now, coming from Ireland, farmers may...
And an IFA background as well.
An IFA background. They may protest, but they don't do it like the French do. So it was quite a shock as to how we were actually going to get through. But we got through it.
They block the roads with the tractors, but they don't start setting stuff on fire.
They don't quite.
Basically.
So far.
And then you went to college. And was college kind of a fairly typical college experience, or did you find yourself working through it, or not much time for partying?
No, I had always, like, because I'd had an aptitude in IT, and I'd done some work in my dad's factory to set up accounts, I had built up, kind of word went around that this guy was able to help small businesses. So I had five or six lines by the time I was 16, and I kept those through college. So I spent a lot of time when I wasn't in college working. I set up a t-shirt printing company. I was in Trinity College, and I printed t-shirts for all of the various clubs and societies. And so I had a goal to try and make money, and that was it. And I probably didn't have as much fun as other people may, but that was my path.
And you then ended up very much in the technology area. You worked with PwC, and that aptitude you had for technology came in very handy. And it sort of landed you then in the betting industry then.
Yeah, I had a couple of very interesting roles in various technology businesses, and I got a call from John Boyle, who ran Boyle Sports, to say, look, ultimately, we've had an online business that for 10 years, we haven't been able to make the online business successful. We have a brilliant retail business. My first thought is, I know nothing about betting. But I met him and realised that they had 1,300 people at the time, and they knew about betting. But what they didn't know is how to make an online business successful. So I did 3 years there, and year one, the online business lost money. Year two, it broke even, and year three, it made more money than shops. But it was full on. It was a full business transformation. But I really enjoyed it because betting is all about tech.
And that tech thing, because of the entrepreneurship, and you were saying in college you set up your own businesses, before betting, you actually set up your own company, Sentia Technologies.
I did, yeah.
Which had grown, and then it went wallop.
Yeah, that was a pretty tough life lesson. So I'd been with PwC for a couple of years and really loved it, but I'd moved into a kind of project area that I wasn't finding as challenging, or I wasn't learning. So I set up my own business. We had two great years, and then the market just turned and we were undercapitalized, and ultimately we folded. I was 26 when we folded. I just didn't have the business acumen.
But it was tricky because of some of the investors. Your dad had put money into it?
Yeah, my dad and family and friends had put money in, and it literally closed 2 weeks before Mia, who's my eldest daughter, was born. So that was pretty tough, thinking, okay, I've got family responsibilities now, and I owe money to people, and I have no income. So I had to just face the music. I had some tough conversations with my father, who said, look, anybody who's put money in, you got to go and drive to them, face them, shake hands, and acknowledge it and say, you'll try and make it up in the future.
So he wanted you to just literally go face to face, knock on doors and say...
Yeah, yeah. So I had sold my car because I needed some cash and I was driving a beat up old Honda, and I remember going and having those conversations. Humbling, but character building.
How was your dad about it? What were your conversations with him like?
Well,
he'd lost
his
money.
His communication at times was challenging. He was a brilliant man, but he found it very difficult. I think he found it that he had asked people to put money into the business, and so that kind of created a challenge between.
Did it sour your relationship with him, or was it just? Would you put it down as a difficult period in that relationship?
I think it was just like he was very driven himself, and you know he went at 100 miles an hour. And so I wouldn't say that it soured it, but it certainly was difficult for a while, yeah. But look...
It's an awkward situation for anyone to be in, father, son, a business and all that, but did you kind of put it up to him and say, don't blame me, this could have happened to anyone, or did you sort of look, this is all totally my fault, I'm so sorry? What approach did you take with him?
I just look forward. I had a... baby, and I had, I had to provide for my family, and so I acknowledged it and said, look, you know, all I have to do is look at the future. I can't look at the past. I acknowledge the mistakes, and the learnings, and look, I think we went into liquidation for 150,000. So it's not it's not the biggest amount of money in the world, but it was a big life lesson. And look, Dad and I had a pretty good relationship overall. So it was just one of the bumps in the road.
What about confidence coming away from that? It's a useful life lesson to learn, I'm sure. Then you can kind of bring things along with you that you've learned from it. But in the aftermath of it, does it dent your confidence?
It did a huge dent in my confidence, yeah. Because it was a guilt of losing other people's investment, and also in my capability. So you second guess everything, and it took some time, and there were some projects afterwards that gave me great confidence. Like I worked with Intuition, Dermot Desmond's business, and we were pioneers in delivering mobile learning compliance training on BlackBerry. We were the first company ever to do it. So in 2008, I went to pick up an award for global innovation in Monte Carlo. So there's things like that that was like, okay.
So you were really
getting
you were really moving
on.
And then you went into Boyle Sports and you were running the whole and growing the online part of that business for them. And then Coral came along.
Yeah,
Coral,
I got a call.
Betting company.
I got a call from a headhunter to say, look, Coral, I think we'd 2,000 shops around the UK, but their online business just wasn't doing anything like it needed. And would I come and run it? And it was interesting because I have a tech background. The role was purely commercial. It was technology, was in a totally different business unit. But it was based out of Gibraltar. I'd never even Googled where Gibraltar was. And so I went and met the Coral team and in London and joined. And originally I'd planned to commute from here. And when John O'Reilly, who was the guy who was the MD at the time, said, come down and have a look. Bring your daughters and family down. So we went down to Gibraltar and spent some time there in Spain. And we went for dinner one night and I said, look, girls, where do you want to live? Ireland or between Spain and Gibraltar? And all hands shot up to say they wanted to live in south of Spain. So that was 2014 and we moved there. And that was probably
The weather swung it, probably.
The weather. And it was like a little house with a swimming pool, I think definitely was a thing that was a factor.
You had it all laid on before the vote was taken.
Yeah.
And then, Carl, you grew that business. But for you, in terms of your own financial success and deals that were done and making money, when Ladbrokes came along and bought out Coral, was that a particularly lucrative
deal
for you?
That was very lucrative for me. The sports betting business, in 3 years, I grew the digital business 600%. I grew the turnover 300% and doubled the margin. But I had to do a full technology transformation. So, we wrote our own front end. It was brought all the tech in house, and that drove a lot of the value in that business, and hence it was really lucrative and interesting, and probably the sweet spot of some of the things I've ever done.
So did you go a bit mad and buy anything big with the money or anything?
I remember I bought quite a large house in the south of Spain, and I bought a Ferrari in the same week, and
so you did go mad, in a kind of a midlife crisis type way.
Well, yeah, it was. I had almost felt that I was driven by. I wanted the success. I wanted the trappings of the success, and then when I got it, I was like, this isn't really me. This isn't actually doing much for me. It was a friend of mine I spoke to, and I just literally had bought the house in the same week. And they said, you're so lucky, you have everything. And I'm thinking, none of this is stuff. And, you know, it's a bit like...
It didn't feel like it. When someone says you have everything, it just didn't ring true.
It didn't at all. And, you know, it's a bit like, you know, the crock of gold at the end of the rainbow isn't as interesting as the colours of the rainbow as it's there, right? It's the... I get huge, huge, huge satisfaction from doing and creating and challenges. And actually the trophies or the things afterwards aren't hugely important. And it made me take a real hard look at my life and what was important to me. So I did a lot of work in spirituality. I became a Reiki master. And I've been part of a number of charities and other things, as well as doing my business stuff.
It's kind of hard to put the Ferrari and the Reiki together, is it?
Well, when I was in my early 20s, I remember reading the autobiography, because I used to read autobiographies and business books about how to be successful. And I remember seeing that so many people had put their lives, and drivers of Ferraris had, safety wasn't a huge thing. And, you know, every 6 months would be another driver would be killed, and I'm thinking that so many people had put their blood into this brand, and they always said I wanted one, but it was more for the aesthetics. And so like, I keep it in Spain, I still have it, but it's not about the it's nice to have nice things in life. But you know, I remember my mother was an addiction counsellor and a very spiritual person, but she was reading a book one day. It says the monk who sold his Ferrari, and I remember slagging her about it, and it's like it became poignant afterwards.
And you moved to Monaco.
Yeah, I moved to Monaco about 4 years ago. I'd found...
Why Monaco?
Well, I was in business with Eddie Jordan at the time, and we were trying to put a bid together to buy a company called Playtech. And like, it was a fascinating story. I went to Eddie and said, look, there's a business. I think it would take about $3 billion to buy this business, but I think you could easily double that with a restructure. And so we rang his finance team, and they said, lads, you're both bonkers. Absolutely bonkers if you think you can do this. So we hung up the phone. He says, well, I don't care. Nobody says no to me, so we're doing it. So 18 months later, we had raised $3 billion, and some amazing stories along the way. Like at one stage, I was pacing around his flat in London because we were selling a part of the business for about $1.5 billion. And I hung up the phone and I turned around and said, Eddie, I've just been arguing over $100 million in the toss of this deal as if it was £1,000. And so there were some real surreal moments, because 100 million is a lot of money in anybody's language.
Deal is a lot of money, in anyone's language. Part of that skill set that you had was around the technology behind betting and sports betting and gambling. How do you feel about that, about being involved in the gambling industry or the betting industry? How comfortably does it sit with you?
So being brought up in a family pub, I felt that it's where a lot of people can go and get a lot of enjoyment from it. I wasn't a betting person myself. First, I remember I used to go to races with my father-in-law, a guy called John O'Toole. He's no longer with us, but he was a real gentleman. He loved going to the races and he loved to have a bet. And I could see how it lit him up. And I think that it's very important. So I take responsibility very seriously in anything that I do. And in sports betting, I think that it's important to be able to allow people to have some fun, but to give them good value for it, give them good experience, and to protect people. So I think that it's, you know, it's a business that you have to be, it's like in the pub.
But it is very difficult, isn't it, to protect people, because
it's
gambling addiction is a big and growing problem.
Gambling addiction is a huge challenge. Technology, you know, we've mentioned it throughout the last few minutes. Technology is getting better and better at helping people and preventing people, spotting patterns, and particularly with AI and the advent of that, I think it will get better and better. So look, I also think
that... What does your mum make of it as an addiction counsellor?
But she had she just passed away before I'd gone into it. But I think that she saw the raw side of addiction, mainly in she dealt with people who was mainly with drug addictions. So I was very cognizant of it. But I think that it's something that, you know, so many people get huge fun and an enjoyment out of having a bet, that it's about trying to make sure that you can protect people as well. And while it's difficult, you're never going to be able to say, you know, let's close down all gambling. So I think that's the responsibility part.
Before we go, Keith, the book and Eddie Jordan, and when you were in March, you talked about your friendship and relationship with him and the stuff that kind of inspired the ideas in the book. A couple of his business lessons there, or life lessons that are in the book.
Well, I think so. In the book, we've got the 25 different lessons, but I'd sum them up with a few of these. So, firstly, he tried to fit in 3 times more into every day than other people, and he did it by saying yes. So, the first time I met him, he was in a cafe, and I walked over to him and said, "Eddie, I'm Keith. I see you've got your bike with you. If you ever fancy a bike ride, let's go." And he said, 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. Okay. How many of us would answer a question like that if somebody randomly...
So he didn't think about putting it off.
He's just...
One other big lesson, if you had to pick one. In the
I think you've got to believe and back yourself. To think big, believe and back yourself and go for it.
Okay, well, Keith O'Loughlin, entrepreneur and author of FTB, Lessons from Eddie Jordan, Inspiration from a Life Lived at Full Throttle. Thank you very much for joining us on the programme.